Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. John Ledyard along with Trevor Sikkema. Trevor writes for Pewter Report. I write for a bunch of different places, FanRag, NDT, Pro Football Weekly. I can't even remember all the places I write for, Trevor, right now this time of year. Might have a little to do with the lack of sleep. How are you holding up on the sleep end? I didn't ask you.
I'm doing all right on the sleep end. I mean, like next week when the draft starts rolling around, we're going to be doing a live video cast for like all 3 days of the draft. So sleep is going to be at an absolute premium next week. But right now, I think I'm all right. I'm holding it together.
One guy who I know probably has not gotten much sleep is joining us today on the Locked On NFL Draft Inside the War Room podcast. Busy time of year for all these beat reporters covering these teams. We're talking today with Cameron Wolf, ESPN reporter covering the Tennessee Titans and the NFL. Cameron, how are you today, my man? Are you ready to make a pick for the Tennessee Titans as their general manager?
Ready as always, I'll ever be.
It's not a role that many of us would love to step into, being on the hot seat. But Cam, I got to ask you about the Titans roster as it is right now. I mean, not being a big buzz team last year, I think, you know, kind of dampens maybe the expectations for this team. Making it in a weak AFC, winning a playoff game, seemed like there were holes. They never really seemed to play up to par, but they got to the big dance and were competitive there. So I have to ask you, as I look at this offense, you know, Rishard Matthews, Corey Davis coming in after being banged up last year, Taywan Taylor, you know, kind of in his second year now. Those are the three receivers. If they spread things out, the offensive line, they bring Josh Klein back on the contract. Is this offense pretty much set? Do you feel like with adding Deion Lewis to complement Derrick Henry, Mariota hopefully having a bounce back year, is this offense pretty much in place? Would you spend one, or would you spend all the top picks in their draft basically addressing the defensive side of the ball?
Oh yeah, I think definitely the early portions of the draft should definitely be focused on defense, and it's a little surprising because the offense was the reason why they had some struggles last season. But they spent a lot of resources on the offense in last year's draft, like you mentioned, Corey Davis and Taywan Taylor and Jonnu Smith were all day one and day two selections at the receiver and tight end position, and then they went out and re-signed some of their offensive linemen. And brought in a couple other ones as well. So they're in a position where they put resources at that offensive position. They probably still could add a little bit on the interior of the offensive line and at the receiver position and do that. But I think that's something that they may be able to find in the middle rounds of this draft. So I definitely think the first pick will be defense and probably somewhere in the front seven area.
Now, yeah, let's bounce back over to the defense. A couple years ago, really just 2 years ago, when I was looking at this Titans roster, I was like, man, corner is going to be a big need on this team. But since then, they've added guys like Logan Ryan. They drafted a guy like Adoree Jackson, obviously signed Malcolm Butler this year, which was a big splash play. Have they done, I guess, what they have set out to do? Like, were the guys that they ended up signing and bringing in, were they the right guys? Were they the guys that they really wanted to go out and get? Or was this more of just a, hey, we need a corner, we got to go get one? How do you think this is all going to gel together with that secondary unit now?
Yeah, I think these were definitely guys they targeted. You know, it's been written and talked about a lot. You know, the general manager, John Robinson, and Mike Vrabel are both former Patriots, and they're doing a lot to emulate some of that culture that they had in New England. So bringing over a guy like Logan Ryan, who had, you know, been brought up in the Patriots system, and then now Malcolm Butler, you know, those are two guys that they targeted probably partially because they played in New England and also because they're sort of workman-like players. Neither is necessarily a star that runs their mouth per se, or, you know, one of the top corners that you think of like Jalen Ramsey or some of those other guys. But they're guys that fit well in a culture. They won't overwhelm the team, and they sort of can give you solid starters. And then obviously Adoree Jackson last year is a guy who's a heck of an athlete, still developing in the corner. As a corner, he may end up being the best of all three of them. So I think they did, you know, target all three of those guys, and I think they feel like they have good depth behind them. And I actually wouldn't be surprised to see them add more talent at corner in this draft as well, even though that's a deep position for them. I know John Robinson has really seen the value of depth at cornerback.
Yeah. Now, I just want to, like, as a follow-up, sorry, I wanted to ask you, how do you think that's going to shake out with the top three? We know you got to – really, in 2018, you've got to have three starting corners. You've got to be able to play nickel at any point. How do you see that shaping out? Where do you see Those guys lining up, who do you think takes that nickel spot? What do you think they're going to do there?
Well, I definitely think Malcolm Butler starts outside at one of the positions. You know, I don't know if they're going to play sides in DNP's system. But I think he'll definitely line up at one position, maybe left corner. And I think you'll have a Dory Jackson line up outside at the other position.
Okay.
With Logan Ryan moving into the slot full time.
Yeah.
He's probably the best of the three at playing in the slot. Dory Jackson didn't play in the slot much last season, but he probably has the potential to do so. So you probably could see them match up, you know, maybe if there's a team with a speedy receiver.
Sure.
Maybe like a T.Y. Hilton that plays in the slot a lot. That might be a responsibility for Dory Jackson, or a guy like Tyreek Hill, a guy that he trailed in the playoff game last season. That could be something that Adore Jackson has on. But I think, you know, Adore and Malcolm on the outside and Logan in your slot is probably going to be your most common lineup setup.
Yeah, that's good points there and good points in their overall usage, because that is important for fans to understand. That could change depending on matchup. And I think you're spot on with what you said about those corners. I got to ask you about the linebacker position. They lose Avery Williamson. You have Wesley Woodyard. Jan Brown, a fifth rounder last year. They bring in Will Compton. Is there an heir apparent on the roster right now? And I know there's a couple other guys I didn't name there. Is there an heir apparent on the roster to that other inside linebacker spot next to Woodyard? Or does this become a we're looking for a starter at this position as we go into the draft?
I definitely think they'd love to come out of this draft with a starter at inside linebacker. The question is, how high do they value that position? And what are the resources you put into it? Because inside linebacker is starting to become a position sort of like nose tackle, where you don't have each of your inside linebackers playing all, you know, three downs. So you bring them out as you go in nickel, you bring them out as a dime. So is that player worth a first round pick? He's got to be able to play all three downs. So I do think they've got, you know, Wesley Woodyard probably for the next year or two playing there. They like Jayon Brown, but he had some up and downs last season. They brought in Will Compton from Washington. I think he's probably just a stopgap guy who can play special teams and, you know, sort of give them a body if they need to go that route. I do think they'll look in the draft and add someone. The question is just, do you go someone in the first round like a Rashad Evans or LVE, or do you wait in the middle rounds for maybe a guy like a Darius Leonard from South Carolina State, or, you know, Oren Burks from Vandy?
Now, I'm just kind of building off that. I mean, you were talking about the draft, especially the top of the Titans, probably going towards that front seven. Now, you addressed the linebackers a little bit, but then now let's talk about, I guess, the front and really the edge guys too. You know, Derek Morgan, he's 29, Arakpo above 30. They have Kevin Dodd. They have guys like Josh Caraway. What are the changes, if they're going to make changes to that front, either on the interior defensive line or the edge? Is there one need more than the other? And are they looking to kind of find the replacements for those guys that are starting there now, because they're kind of both getting up there in age?
Oh, absolutely. I think that could probably be the Titans' biggest need, and it's more of a long-term need, but it's also an immediate need. They're going to need more pass rush at both positions, but I think particularly at edge, as you mentioned, both of those guys, Morgan and Arakpo, are either at or on the or getting towards the wrong side of 30, and they both are in the final year of their contract. So you've got a situation where you're probably not going to bring both of them back after 2018, and you may not bring either one. You know, Arakpo has been the more productive of the two, but he's also the older of the two, where he's going to be 32 when the season starts. So I think they've got to find a guy who can be the third rusher as a rookie. And also a guy who can be their potential number one rusher within a year or two. So I think that's something of high value. Kevin Dodd has not been the player they expected in the first 2 years. Mike Vrabel said he's going to give him another shot, but I don't think you can come into this offseason trusting Kevin Dodd to be anything more than a fourth or fifth rusher,
right,
if he even makes the team. So I think you're in a situation where you've got to get that cupboard filled up with more talented edge rushers first.
So with that teaser in place, with the 25th overall pick in the 2018 NFL draft, the Tennessee Titans select who?
Marcus Davenport, edge from UTSA.
There we go. And why Marcus Davenport? Obviously, a ton of buzz about him. There's a lot of people that don't think he'll even get out of the top 20, but he, you know, in this mock draft scenario, he falls to 25. What intrigues you about Davenport?
Well, it's got to be his overall potential. Obviously, he's a small school kid, and there's going to be a little bit of rawness there. I think he would be a great player for the Titans to develop behind Arakpo. Mm-hmm. And Morgan, I'm a little surprised he's actually on the board. Yeah. At this point, I thought it would be a situation where, like you mentioned, he goes top 15, top 20 because of the skill set he has, the size, the length. He has the potential to be a 10 sack a year guy when you get him developed. So I think he could fill that role as the Titans' next up and coming pass rusher.
I'm not Davenport's biggest fan, especially like in a right away thing, but I actually think that the Titans are like his best spot if he's going to the first round. I mean, would you agree, John? Or
I mean, yeah, then I think, yo, Cameron, let us know what you think of this, but I mean, to work with a guy like Dean Pease, that's been around as long as Pease has been.
Yeah.
That's developed as, I mean, look just last year with what he's did with Judon in Baltimore, what he did with what he was doing with Tyus Bowser, what they trusted him to do with Bowser and Williams and Vrabel obviously playing that position. It seems like a spot where Davenport can learn under some pretty good guys, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you got Mike Vrabel, who basically played a lot of that linebacker position as he goes on. He's a hands-on guy, even though he's the head coach. So I know that's a position where they could work with him and give him a lot of development. Your question is going to be based on, you know, is he going to be a guy that can take car coaching, can be able to be a guy that can develop in that sort of atmosphere. And I think it would benefit him to be in a smaller market considering where he's coming from. So I think it would be a good fit. There's a few other guys on the board they would be interested in as well, you know, from the inside linebacker and edge position. And they might even consider trading back. But if Davenport's on the board, he definitely would have to be in the conversation for that pick.
Terrific stuff. Terrific insights. Cameron Wolf, ESPN reporter for the Tennessee Titans in the NFL. Cameron, really appreciate your time and your insights, man. I really appreciate you taking the time out of what I know is a busy schedule to talk to us about some NFL draft choices.
Yeah, for sure, Gus. Thanks.
Absolutely. There goes Cameron Wolf, ladies and gentlemen. Terrific to have him on the show and his insights. Marcus Davenport going off the board to the Titans. The Atlanta Falcons coming up next. Excited for that pick. We're almost finished here on the Inside the War Room Locked On NFL Draft Mock Draft. Make sure you guys stick around and stay with us throughout the duration. We're back on the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. John Ledyard, Trevor Sikkema, the Atlanta Falcons on the clock. We're pumped about it because we've got Gina Thomas in with us, the Falcoholic editor over there for the Falcon site. Does some awesome work on the Atlanta Falcons. We were really excited to have you on the show. Gina, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. You guys, you know, we've rolled through this mock draft. We've thrown out the picks there for you guys. You guys know kind of who's off the board. Marcus Davenport just coming off the board. Maybe somebody the Falcons could have their eye on. But if we're honest, Gina, there's not a ton of needs on this Atlanta Falcons team, you know, and it's one of the things that gets talked about all the time. This is a team without much, not even starting holes, but depth. It just seems like it's good across the board. And where do you start when you're looking at this Atlanta Falcons roster in terms of they need to get better at these places if they want to get back to the Super Bowl?
You know, I would say the first place you look is along the defensive line. We saw Dontari Poe, who was last year's big free agency acquisition, walk this offseason as a free agent. And then Adrian Claiborne also, he ended up signing with the Patriots. So those are two pretty big names gone along that defensive line. So they've really got to beef up that rotation, I think, during the draft. And then if you also look at guard, they did bring in a free agent from the 49ers, which is a good fit just because they're still running such a similar blocking scheme to Kyle Shanahan's. And so he'll come in with some level of familiarity there. But it's still a need. I don't think that that's a permanent solution. And then also, it may not seem like it when you've got names like Julio Jones and Mohamed Sanu on the roster, but I do think that some wide receiver depth, I think that they could improve there. Justin Hardy really hasn't developed into the type of number three receiver that they need him to be. So I think that they could probably upgrade that position through the draft also.
Gina, talk to me about just them moving on from Kyle Shanahan. Obviously, he was such a big part of how their offense was innovative as it was a couple years ago when they were making that Super Bowl run. And then last year, I mean, they had some flashes, certainly, namely when they played against the Bucs in Atlanta, when I got to personally watch Julio Jones have like 253 receiving yards against them. So they're obviously capable of doing things on offense, and we still know that. But just what has been the difference, I think, in offense with this team going from Kyle Shanahan to Steve Sarkisian and moving forward, kind of what it's going to be? Because just from my perspective, on an outsider perspective, it was something that started really slow during the season, but then kind of caught on and I guess started to work pretty well during the end of the season. Is that what you saw as well?
Yeah, I think that we definitely saw them kind of hit their stride as the season went on. And I don't think that's unusual. If you look back to the 2015 season, we had Falcons fans calling for Kyle Shanahan's head, you know, yeah, 4 or 5 weeks into the season. And it took him a while to really find that chemistry with his players and start firing on all cylinders, which we saw in 2016. That said, I know that Shanahan kind of left a bad taste in people's mouths by not running the ball in the dang Super Bowl when they had an 8-point lead and, you know, could have held on and scored, you know, kicked a field goal and taken the points and probably held on for a win. So I get why people don't see it this way, but Shanahan's actually an offensive genius. He is able to stay two steps ahead of every defensive coordinator. He's always able to anticipate what they're going to give him. And so that's it's a very rare quality. And I think that Sark has the potential to be a good offensive coordinator, and I think we will see the offense take a step forward this season just with a higher level of familiarity and a higher comfort level between him and the players. That said, I don't think we're ever going to see this offense get back to 2016 levels. I think that's unrealistic just because Shanahan is a really unique coordinator, and he has a skill set that very few coordinators possess.
So if that's the case, then the defense probably needs to be even better. They've shown great strides, I think, over the last couple of years. Just, you know, they've really molded to what, you know, they kind of had in mind. I feel like what Dan Quinn wanted, you know, when he took over this defense was being a fast, explosive unit, lots of athletes on the field, but guys also know what they're doing. The biggest story probably has been Deion Jones, I think, and his development over the years, and he's become a legitimate star at the position. But what about the rest of the linebacking core? I know Duke Riley was a guy I liked a lot coming out of. I know he didn't play a ton as a rookie and had some trouble picking some things up, it seemed like. Devondre Campbell's been a guy who's played at least situationally. Doesn't look like there's much depth on the roster. I know Beasley's role can be really versatile, but is linebacker another position that's kind of a priority for this team going into the draft?
Yeah, I think that it is. And I think that when you have a defensive-minded head coach like Quinn, you're always going to see some level of emphasis on that side of the ball. One thing that Falcons fans should recognize as a luxury on this team after the Mike Smith years, where they had sort of substandard defensive talent and basically no depth on the roster, which is a very bad combination. They really are pretty well stacked at every position. And even linebacker, there are a lot of bodies there. It just is a matter of figuring out which guys are the best fits and which guys can elevate the play this year. And like you said, Deion Jones is definitely one of those guys. Vic Beasley didn't have as good of a year this past season as he did in 2016, but certainly still a very good young player. And I think that maybe that's the most exciting thing about this defense. So many of these players are young, and so the core of this group should be intact for the foreseeable future and pretty affordable.
So obviously the board for this mock draft kind of is what it is, and there are players there and there are players that are not. But even without the board, what are some, I guess, potential targets for the Falcons that kind of you've been hearing that you could see on this roster, either names or just traits or certain positions that you could see that they really need to fill? Are there specific examples or specific guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think unless you're Mel Kiper, you don't expect the Falcons to go with a wide receiver in the first round. I'm still kind of surprised by that one, but, you know, to each his own. I think that most people believe the team is leaning toward a defensive tackle late in the first round. And, you know, there are certainly some good options to be had there, hopefully, when the Falcons pick. Cornerback, upgrading the nickel corner position. Yeah. That's been Brian Poole the last couple of seasons. And Poole is a very good young player.
Be careful. That's a Florida guy. Be careful.
That's my boy.
I love Poole. Let me give you a very quick Poole anecdote because I think that it really sums him up. So I'm in the locker room. This is during the Super Bowl, you know, run. It's during the playoffs. And I'm doing a story on ping pong in the locker room, because I don't know if you're aware of this, but that's my beat. Okay. Falcons playing ping pong in the locker room. I'm a very serious journalist. So I'm talking to players about who the best ping pong player is. And spoiler alert, it's Julio Jones, who is the best at everything. Like,
really?
He is a world-class athlete. I'm shocked. A joy to watch him do anything athletic, including playing ping pong.
Wow, but okay.
The specialists are very good. Like Matt Bosher, the punter, excellent.
Huh.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising, but I asked Brian Poole, who's the best ping pong player in the locker room, and he said, here's my top three, Poole. I love him. He just has confidence for days. So, but I still think that they may look to that position and the draft. And then tight end is another one. They let Levine Toilolo go. And so Austin Hooper didn't really live up to expectations last year. He has a tendency to drop the ball. So I could see them trying to add somebody who can come in and contribute right away at that position. I would say that those are really the biggest needs, but they have the luxury of being able to also look at best player available when they're picking and sort of fill out the roster that way, which is, again, a thing that Falcons fans haven't been able to see this team do for a long time, right? Because Mike Smith kind of left the roster in disarray.
I just got to say, the Bucks put in a ping pong table. I think this year was the first year they had it in there. And to like the special teams players being good, their punter, Brian Anger, is like elite. And like their fullback slash like utility player, Alan Cross, like both of those dudes are just elite at ping pong. And so I can understand that special teamers being dominant at ping pong thing.
I wonder if it's just because they have more downtime. That's weird.
Well, now the specialists all complained to me. Now, Matt Bryant doesn't really play, but Matt Bryant is the only player on that roster older than I am. So I get it. but you know, our punter Bosher and then our long snapper, Josh Harris, they've both complained to me that usually when the media is in there, they're in meetings. So they're like, hey, we're not showing up on your ping pong power rankings. Like, what's up with that? I'm like, I haven't seen you play. And they're like, well, that's not fair. We have, like, everybody took it really seriously.
Special
I was like,
teams.
Hey, I'm going to do power ranking. It's going to be really fun and tongue-in-cheek and hilarious. And no, it was not tongue-in-cheek and hilarious. Like, players took it very seriously.
Yeah. No, they awesome. Do. Last year, Kendall Beckwith was just like at all times on the ping pong table, and he would just like point his paddle at somebody and be like, all right, you want some? Like, come get it. Like, let's play ping pong, something. So I love that stuff. That was, people got a kick out of that. So I'm glad you do that with the Falcons too.
Yeah, that's terrific. That's the kind of content that we're here for. We're also, we got to know your pick though. So we're at what are the Falcons picking at? Number 26.
26?
Right? 26.
So with the 26th overall pick in the 2018 NFL draft, Gina Thomas, who do you select for the Atlanta Falcons?
I'm taking Vita Vea out of Washington because he is on the board for some reason. Like, I don't know what all these other teams are doing. He would have been my first defensive tackle off the board. So I was going through and I'm like, Payne's off the board. Oh, Hurst is off the board. Even though I'm an Ohio State fan, like, I don't know if I could have actually picked a Michigan player.
That would have been interesting.
Yeah. Then I was like, why is Vita still on? Why is he available? Yeah. I don't know why he's so actually I'm like, I messaged the guys that I write with and I'm like, hey, did I miss him? Like, did he get arrested? Or I'm like, I just have to make sure. I've had a very busy week at work. I'm not sure, like, did he get busted for drugs, or is like, is there something
that's
that
awesome.
they're like no, that's just weird. I don't know why that is. So
there have been so many, like, and the people who have been looking at this mock draft, they're like, man, this mock is, it's going so different than a lot of the ones that we've seen in the mainstream, but every pick makes a bunch of sense for all the teams. Like, for example, like, I think this is honestly, I think Atlanta is the perfect spot for Vita Vea. Mm-hmm. Like, to go, to have an immediate impact, the talent fills the need. Like, this is, like, we keep going through this mock draft and we keep selecting, we keep having these players get selected. And it's like, man, I don't really see him going to this team, but that's a really good pick. And I think, I mean, I don't know what John thinks, but I think that Vita is perfect for a plug-and-play guy at 26.
I totally agree. I mean, a player that I would really compare him to is Poe.
Right.
Poe is tremendously athletic for his size, like ridiculously athletic. And I think we can look at Vea's combine performance and say the same thing. You know, that guy can move for a big guy. That was, his 40 was ridiculous to watch. And that kind of speed and athleticism it's Dan Quinn's ideal. So yeah, I think that he's a great fit. If the real draft shakes out this way, I would be delighted.
Yeah, it's interesting because his stock has been everywhere. You know, we've seen him I mean, Trev, you remember you beginning it like a couple months ago, you were talking about as a possibility for the Bucks. You know, that seems to be on the back burner maybe a little bit that he'll get out of the top 10, but there's talk about him certainly going to I mean, Miami, I know there's been talk of at 11. There's been talk of Washington.
Right,
there's also been
right.
talk that he may fall to the 20s and be available in this type of a range because teams do question how much pass rush he brings to the table. And I think there's enough mm-hmm. there. You know, I'm maybe a tiny bit lower on him than other people, but certainly.
Yeah, but at 26?
Yeah, 26. I mean, and like Gina said, this is a big need for the Falcons. You know, and,
right.
And Gina, correct me if I'm wrong here, but do you feel like his pairing with Grady Jarrett is a big part of this because they're different in some ways, but the Falcons mm-hmm. are all about athleticism. They're not going to draft a guy if they don't have athleticism on the field. So Vea kind of can wear both hats in terms of being a good complement to Grady, but still an explosive athlete.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's really what makes it ideal. Grady is a guy who has just, you know, blown expectations out mm-hmm. of the water. He dropped in the draft because of his size, but he has been spectacular. Yeah. And so, it would be, I think, a really formidable pairing.
Yeah. Some of us, pointing at myself, still had a second-round grade on Grady Jarrett, and will forever rue the day that the NFL let that happen. But the Falcons are better for it. Gina, we thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Guys, give her a follow on Twitter, at Gina Thomas. She does wonderful work, and really appreciate you taking the time out of what I know is a busy time of the year to talk a little bit at Falcons draft with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed it.
For sure. Absolutely. We got the New Orleans Saints coming up next on the clock. Pittsburgh Steelers, Jaguars, Vikings, Patriots, Eagles. We're getting near the end, folks. You keep it locked right here on the Inside the War Room Mock Draft on the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast.